And we want to start with something that is disturbing. And we're going to play an interview in a little while, and you're going to find some of the details in this interview extremely upsetting. And this is not because we want to depress you in any way, shape or form, but we want to bring the reality of what it's like to be a male survivor of domestic abuse. One who had been scolded, stabbed, beaten with a hammer. Now, that's what happened to Alex Skeel. He's just 22. His former partner, Jordan Worth, who is also 22, has been jailed for 7.5 years for grievous bodily harm and coercive controlling behaviour. Now, Jordan Worth is the first woman to be convicted of that crime since it became an offence in 2015. And Alex has been speaking out about what happened to him as he wants to encourage other victims in abusive relationships to come forward. And we had a conversation as a team about this issue, about male victims, because of course whenever we do a debate, well, it's not debate, is it? We have a conversation about domestic abuse. It is usually, and the statistics of course back that up, it's usually women survivors of domestic abuse that we talk about. And we always get a text or two or three or four from men saying, why are you not talking about male survivors of domestic abuse? Well, in the case of Alex Skeel, he was subjected to multiple physical injuries. He was denied food. He was isolated from his family. And he has been speaking to the BBC. And I will reiterate, I need to warn you that some of you will find the details contained within this interview extremely upsetting.
She literally backed me into a corner, pinned me in, boiled the kettle about 3 times to ensure that it was hot. She opened the top bit up and just launched it at me. And that's an indescribable feeling. I went to lie in the bath and she didn't let me do things like that. It didn't let me run under cold water or anything. I just remember lying there naked, because obviously the burns were right up into my groins. And I could just see, it was as if my body was cooking. I could see the steam coming up on my body. The next morning I woke up, it was like a massive, like, yellow, pussy sort of balloon. I had about 3 or 4 of them going up my lower right arm. And, yeah, I didn't really know what to do, because I knew it did look right, but I wasn't allowed to get it treated.
So while this was going on, you couldn't get it treated at the hospital.
Yeah.
You couldn't contact your relatives, your mum, your dad. Please tell me at this stage the neighbours got involved and saved you.
On the night that I got my wrist cut and it was bleeding into the sink, she realised that the police were outside because she saw the blue lights, and she started panicking. And she was like, tell them that you did it to yourself. So I told them that. I was on the stairs, and I remember the firearms people came because they're trained as a paramedic and they needed to urgently do something because it was open. They stitched off the nerve, essentially, and the nerve and the vein, so that it stopped the blood flow, and just really tightly wrapped it up. And they sent me to Bedford A&E with her. And we were at Bedford from about 2 a.m. to about 10 a.m, so a good 8 hours. And then after that, I was transferred to Addenbrookes, and they were going to do immediate surgery to save the tendons in my finger that was cut previously. I had my cannula in and I was about to go into theatre for surgery. She said, no, you're going to come home because the waiting hours aren't suitable for me. I can't stay here with you. So you're going to come home. So she basically took me out of the hospital. And the head consultant surgeon, I remember, he grabbed my face and with his thumb stroked me under the eyes and said, are you sure you're safe to go home? And I said, yes. Now I've learned that they flagged it up at the point and they tried to get the police involved at that point. A week later, so the following Saturday in the afternoon, we were arguing. The neighbours started like walking around the house looking in. And I said to her, we need to stop because the police are going to come round again. And it was the same officer that had come round, PC Ed Finn. I opened the door and he goes, hello, mate, you all right? I said, yes. And he goes, can we have a quick word upstairs, please? So I went upstairs with him. Mm-hmm. with a female officer, and they said, we see stab wounds every day, we're not daft, she's doing this to you. And eventually he actually said, I'm going to turn my camera off. And as soon as he did that, I said, yeah, she's done all this to me.
It's shocking, isn't it? You can't help but be moved by that, can you? What is stopping men from coming forward, from admitting to the authorities that this is happening to them? Well, that was a voice of Alex Skeel talking to BBC Three Counties' Matthew Lockwood. And Alex has also spoken about how hard many men find it to come forward to speak about the domestic abuse that they are suffering. And he had this message for men who find themselves in a similar situation to him.
People are obviously too frightened to talk about it. It's obviously hard to talk about it. I'm 10 months on from the situation, so I've had time to reflect. And it's been a horrific journey with operations on my hand. I had to be operated on. Burns had to be dressed for months. I had operation on my head and my brain had to be operated on. I'm still getting treated now for my hand, and it probably won't ever get better. I've got to live with scars. But it's all about that inner strength, and people need to understand that you're far more of a person if you speak out about it than you are trying to hide it in, because all that you're going to do is keep getting worse. You're only going to get better if you talk about it.
But you've also got to have people that you feel will listen to you, presumably. You've also got to be able to feel confident enough. And abuse, especially psychological abuse, is about eroding your confidence, isn't it? It's making you feel worthless, taking away from you your dignity, your integrity. But as a man, is society, is it in the right place to accept that we as men can also be survivors of domestic abuse? Do you think that this case specifically, where we see for the first time a woman going to prison, this is according to the police, for the first time, for this kind of behaviour, that it will change society's behaviour when it comes to talking about male survivors of domestic abuse? What do you think? Do you believe that this will happen? That now that we are in a situation whereby finally it's out there in the open, that men too can be abused by their partners, that it will change society's behaviour? Do you think that we so often talk about toxic masculinity, don't we? These things that lead to us men harming ourselves. Another angle to that toxic masculinity is a sense that we feel as though our masculinity is undermined, that society will see us as weak and feeble. How could you let a woman do that to you? How could you? Be a man, man up. Can't let your missus do that to you. You're weak. These kinds of opinions. How can you tell your mates? How can you go down to the pub or wherever you socialise after a five-a-side football match and say, this is happening to me? So do you think this case will change society's behaviour when it comes to talking about male survivors of domestic abuse? If you are one, do you think seeing the fact that a woman has been prosecuted and is going to prison will empower you to come forward, to start to tell people, look, I'm not here to voyeuristically go through your private life on national radio for the next 42 minutes. That's not what we're here for. If you want to share your stories with us, that's entirely up to you, and you can remain anonymous if you wish to. What I'm trying to sense is whether this will change the conversation. Give us a call, 08085 909693, text 85058. And you know, look, you don't have to have experienced this personally to get involved with our conversation today. You can have a thought about this and whether you were shocked, and why wouldn't you be shocked about what Alex Skeel went through? But then whether you feel that now it's out there in the open and it's got a huge amount of press, that it will change society's attitudes. You can tweet me at BBC5Live. You can also email me, afternoonedition@bbc.co.uk. Mark Brooks is with us. He's the chairman of Mankind Initiative, which is a UK charity for male... I've got the word victims in my script. I usually prefer to use the word survivors. Mark, what is the word you use? I don't want to get bogged down in semantics, but it feels that survivors is the right word to use rather than victims.
Well, I think when men call us or contact us, they're in a state of where they're actually a victim.
Right.
They become a survivor when we or other professionals have actually helped them escape from that situation. So, you know, Alex has moved from being a victim to a survivor, and I think the messages that he's been putting out over the last couple of days means that there'll be far more men who will turn or convert from being a victim to a survivor, because they'll be given a confidence, encouraged and supported to actually come forward and get help. So, you know, what Alex has been saying really resonates with lots of men who will be going through this right now.
People could say that the question itself has been editorialised because it assumes that society does not accept or does not take seriously male victims of domestic abuse. What do you think, Mark?
Well, I think that's true. Because we still see cases of men who call us who say they haven't been believed. We still see things in the media where men have been victims, where they've been laughed at or been treated as an element of ridicule. We even did a social experiment 2 years ago, which showed that a woman who was a victim was rightly helped and supported. But when we changed the roles where it was the man who was the victim, people were laughing and not taking that seriously. The key thing, though, I would say, is things have been changing over the last 5 years. So we used to get lots of men who said they weren't believed or supported. We get fewer now. And I think that stories and experiences such as Alex's will actually help move the conversation on further, but there is still a long way to go until society recognise that both men and women are victims of domestic abuse, and we really need police forces, local councils and politicians to really make that far more clearer than they're currently doing.
We know it's a hidden crime for both men and women, Mark. Mm. But what is the data that we have with specific regard to male victims of domestic abuse?
Well, in terms of the specific data, and this is government data, around 450,000 men are actually victims of partner abuse every year, and that's obviously abuse at the hands of their current or an ex-partner. And for women, that's around 860,000. So, but generally speaking, around one in three victims of partner abuse are men. But also, men are three times less likely to tell anybody that they're a victim of domestic abuse as opposed to women. And we know far too few women come forward as well. So there really is a difference between the men male reluctance, if you like, to actually come forward and get help. And that's why we think stories like this, experiences from Alex, but also general awareness campaigns will really help more men come forward.
Well, that's what we're here for, Mark. I mean, this is exactly what this is about. But it is also about thinking about how society's behaviour towards male victims of domestic abuse is changing. And you've said already over the last 5 years you have seen a change. And do you strongly believe that this particular case of a woman being prosecuted and sent to prison is going to be a catalyst for change?
It will be a catalyst for change because obviously the coverage, the awareness will really help, especially with regard to areas such as the health service, GP services and A&E, which we think are particular areas where male victims are not taken seriously. We also think, if you like, the fact that it was his neighbours who actually saved his life. And I think the message will be that whether you're a neighbour, whether you're a friend, family member, a work colleague, we all have a duty to look after male victims or try and spot the signs as we rightly do a female victim. And I think the last point is where this really is a game changer is the fact of Alex's age, because often when it comes to prosecutions or cases or calls to our helpline or many other helplines, tends to be men in their late 30s, 40s, 40s, 50s, the fact that this was a young man will actually open the eyes of many young men who are going through this and just thinking that they're in the same situation that Alex was, that they can't believe or recognise this is happening. So it's his age which really does make a difference.
Mark Brooks is the chairman of Mankind Initiative, you've just heard speaking. We also have Rachel Horman, who's a solicitor specialising in domestic abuse and stalking. We also have Linda Pendered, who is an advice worker with the charity Northamptonshire Domestic Abuse Services. Linda, if I could start with you, good afternoon.
Hello.
What are the barriers that stop men from coming forward?
I think the one thing Alex said is fear, and people in the community don't understand that fear, the fear of coming forward.
But that's similar for women too, isn't it? What specifically do you think, Linda, stops a man from coming forward?
All those things, embarrassment, that fear that he won't be believed, especially if he phones the police, is that police officer going to believe me? And then he could be still in the home afterwards, even if the police come out. If it's not as serious as Alex, so then he's got the fear there of carrying on in that relationship. So I would just say that there are services out there, and come and talk to someone, even to start with, if it's just that first conversation, because services will believe you.
Someone's just tweeting me actually saying, you just blamed masculinity for a man being the victim of domestic abuse. It's sick. The reason I blamed masculinity, Linda, was because this idea of what a man should be that's imposed on us men from society.
Yes, from an early age.
That was my point about masculinity and blaming masculinity, a toxic masculinity, because as men, how could we? How could a woman possibly dominate us?
And Alex will tell you quite easily, it starts off very subtly, it builds up and it gets worse and worse and worse. And that is how it is, not, you know, that male domination in society is something that's inherent in us, isn't it? Those beliefs are there and they always have been, and it's about changing those beliefs, that actually we're human beings and these things happen to everybody.
Are you seeing more and more men, Linda, coming forward?
Yes, in the last 18 months as an advice worker, I have got a lot more men coming forward, and it could just be that little bit of advice at the start where it's it wouldn't be serious enough for the police to come out, or it could be sort of where it's getting more serious. But yes, more men are coming forward and are asking for our help.
A question that's always put, and it's an indelicate one, to say the least, is why don't you just leave them?
Lots of reasons why you don't leave, and one is fear and the other one is isolation. So if you're isolated, you know you're not sure if someone's going to believe you. You don't ring your friend up and say, this is happening to me, because that person's isolating you from your family and friends. Also, for a lot of male survivors, it's about their children as well. So in Alex's case, he didn't have children, but for a lot of men, the fear is, if you leave, if you tell anyone, you will not see your children. And that's awful, isn't it?
Yeah. Oh, gosh, that's bringing a tear to my eye, just the thought of that. Okay. Mm-hmm. So, of course, these particular type of woman, and yes, will hold that against the man, and who doesn't want to be there for his children? It's interesting you point about isolation. This text came in, and bear with me, it's quite a long one, but it's worth reading out. 5 years ago, my youngest son married and moved up north. Since then, we have been bombarded with criticism and demeaning comments non-stop from his wife, plus a catalogue of relentless divisionary tactics. We have been screamed at in public and so on. We did not initially understand why. We questioned ourselves and lost confidence. My son always looks nervous and sad. I don't know what to do. We hardly speak anymore. I cry a lot for the loss. His wife's father says his daughter is often rude and aggressive to our son, which hurts because he's gentle and kind. I rang the male domestic abuse line, who put it all into context. All the tactics were designed to divide and isolate him from his family. We are at our wits' end. What can this person do, Linda?
Well, he could make a phone call, or he could talk to his family, but mum can't force him to open up about that. So it's something very much that man has to do is say, yes, this is happening, or something's not right.
So as the father, he has to try and encourage his son to open up about this.
That's right, yeah.
So he essentially has to go and doorstep his own son, really, isn't he?
Well, he's also got to think about safety aspects, hasn't he? Because he doesn't want to make it worse for his son. So it's more about trying to get that phone call or trying to get that information to his son in a subtle way.
There is an action line number which you can call as well. If you are in a situation where you think you might need the kind of help that Linda has been describing, it's a range of organisations. You can go to BBC Action Line website, which is bbc.co.uk/actionline. You can also hear recorded information listing organisations that help specifically with domestic abuse. Now, all you need to do for free, you can call this number 0800 888 809. Let's speak to my next guest, who is a solicitor who deals with these issues. Thank you, Rachel, for joining us here on 5 Live this afternoon.
No problem.
This is, in many ways, a watershed moment, isn't it? Being the first female to be convicted. Since the law has been brought in, have you seen a rise in the number of coercive abuse cases? And it might be worth, in fact, defining what that actually means.
Well, coercive control is a criminal offence, and it has been since 2015. What I have seen, and I was involved in campaigning for that law because there was a gap. And coercive control is a pattern of behaviour, and that's the important thing. Domestic abuse is a pattern of behaviour. It's never just a one-off incident. And coercive control is maybe what we would describe commonly as emotional abuse. So there isn't a requirement for bruising, for physical injury, for criminal damage or threats to kill or anything of that nature. It is more in terms of emotional abuse. What I have seen since that law came in 2015, are very few cases actually of coercive control prosecutions. And in general terms, the ones I have seen tend to be linked to other offences, as in this case, where there have also been much more serious assaults, etc., which could have been prosecuted separately, and then the coercive control is added on as an additional charge. So there are still very few coercive control prosecutions on their own, and that's a shame.
We are going to come back to this. That is a shame indeed, Rachel, that there is. I mean, that's not going to encourage men to come forward, is it, knowing that...
No, and that's the case across the board.
For men and women.
For men and women. Whilst we've had this law since 2015, it just doesn't seem to be being picked up. And the police are still saying to clients, come back when he hits you or when she hits you. And that's just not good enough.
And I've heard this said before about making a diary.
Yeah, it's very, very, very useful. But it can also put the victim at risk. Because if the perpetrator finds that diary, then that can obviously lead to violence or abuse. So whilst it is really good evidentially, it needs to be done in a way that the perpetrator is not going to find it. So if you can do it at work or have some kind of safe system online, then absolutely it's great evidence.
Mark Brooks, chairman of Mankind Initiative, Rachel, was saying that over the last 5 years he has seen more men come forward. Would you say your experience as a solicitor specialising in domestic abuse that men are slowly but surely coming forward in greater numbers?
Yes, I think more men are coming forward as the issue of domestic abuse, you know, gets more publicity generally. So, you know, people are coming forward more, men included. And I do accept that men have other barriers in terms of reporting it. You described it as the toxic masculinity, and certainly the men that I have spoken to will say, I feel ashamed, this shouldn't be happening to me, I'm a man, I should be able to look after myself. So they do feel embarrassed and ashamed, but the law is there in terms of the civil law or in terms of the criminal law, because I specialise in obtaining protective orders, etc., for victims, because all too often the police just don't do anything. So these orders are there for everybody.
Can I also say about that is, Rachel, you're quite right. The orders are there, but sometimes it is very, very hard to get someone legal aid unless there is proof of like you're saying, again, you go down that, well, has there been any physical assaults? Has there been this? Has there been that?
Yeah.
So that is also for males and females, legal aid and accessing legal aid to get a non-molestation order and things like that is actually very difficult.
Yes, okay. It can be. And the requirements in terms of people's income and savings are very, very strict. So many people won't actually qualify, even though it is still there in theory.
Okay, listen, we're going to go to the news in a little bit, but I do want you to get in contact with us, Rachel, Linda, Mark. Thank you. 850058 is the text number. We're keeping all three of our guests with us, and or you can call me on 08085909693. But of course, I can understand this is a hugely sensitive issue, and if it's something that you're going through or someone that you love is going through, then you might not want to be on national radio talking about it. But if it's something that you're not going through, but you've got a strong opinion on this, and you feel that it's changing, you feel that society is going to be more accepting going forward of male victims of domestic abuse, then equally get in contact with us. I always love to hear your opinions. It's now, oh gosh, I'm going very late to the news, 35 minutes past one. Got 21 minutes left of this hour. I want to talk to you, as I have been so far since the show started, about male victims of domestic abuse and whether or not this case that you've seen all over the news of a woman who's now been sent to prison for over 7 years for abusing her partner, her male partner, whether that is going to lead to a societal change, that men who are victims of domestic abuse are going to be taken seriously, that they feel confident enough to say, I am a victim. This is happening to me. And I want someone to listen to me, and I want someone to do something about it. Now, that is a long journey. I mean, Linda Pendered is with us. And Linda, I mean, you're an advice worker.
Yes.
Not all abuse, as we well know, this is what coercive control is all about. Not all abuse is physical.
No.
So how does it manifest itself? If a woman wants to control a man in a certain way, but perhaps not physically, wants to abuse him, but not physically, how does this manifest itself?
Sort of quite slowly to start with. So it's those little things, and it's hard to explain, but I will say, you imagine if someone hides your car keys and then watches you looking for those car keys, and you eventually find them, knowing full well that you put them in the same place you always put them. But then afterwards, when you mention that to someone, you say, well, I know I didn't put them there. You must have moved them. And that person then starts to say, no, you're being paranoid. Don't be silly. You've got mental health issues. Okay. And that might be one thing happens then, and 2 weeks later, something else happens. And very slowly and very slowly, those things build up and you begin to lose your confidence. And then it's like, who are you ringing? Who just phoned you? Well, let me check your phone. And as that builds up and builds up, the control becomes worse and worse. Where are you going? How long are you going to be? Why are you going to see your mum? She's interfering. She does this. She does that. And eventually, for that person who's going through that, it's easier not to talk to anyone. And always liken it, in the end, you walk down the street with your head down in case you accidentally look at someone or speak to someone. And that's how it is, and that's how it becomes.
Let's read out some texts, and I'd like to get some opinions on the text that I'm reading out. Thank you, as always, for sending in some very personal experiences, and the fact that you've entrusted us as a show to read those out is a real privilege, so thank you for doing that. Speaking from my own experience, says this texter, the thing that stopped me ringing the police because of the violence I was experiencing was fear of prosecution. My ex-partner was very good at playing the victim. I made the mistake after years of provocation abuse of retaliating. It was the worst thing I ever did. It gave her more power. Mark, have you heard that before?
Sadly, yes. I mean, we always advise or suggest that men don't retaliate in those situations. But yes, I mean, the whole issue around false allegations it is a problem, has been growing for some time. We also see it around legal aid issues, actually, when it comes to family custody disputes in relationships which are splitting up. But sadly, that is something we hear a lot.
This text came in, and it's good because it paints a positive picture of an outcome. It says, I called the police 10 days ago. The police were excellent and I was believed. It made me feel so much better. We men are always being blackmailed. The mother lies, and in the past she was believed. Now things have changed. I would ask all men who are in my situation to please go to the police, as they have changed. Again, that's a question for you, Mark. Is there a sense, it's an overused phrase, but is there a postcode lottery in this, or do you think that there is a uniformity of response now across police forces across this country?
I would say there's a uniformity of response. I mean, as I said, 10 years ago, we used to get lots of men saying they'd gone to the police, they hadn't been believed, they'd even been laughed at. But we don't get that now. So, you know, the clear message is, you know, please go to the police. They are better trained. They will listen to you. They will be they will believe you. So, you know, the response that that chap had there is exactly what we expect from the police and what is now happening.
Someone who is in this situation, I strongly believe that we could all learn to look at it differently, in that the fact is that it takes a lot more strength to suffer abuse and to forgive and carry on than to administer abuse. Looking at it this way may help lift the stigma that prevents men from reporting cases. Linda, what do you think of that text?
I would say please report, or at least please speak to someone, because you will get the information, and that will be more empowering than carrying on in that situation. Once you've left, then you can work on forgiving that person.
Because it seems unusual to use the word strength to suffer abuse. The strength has to be to go and report the abuse, because your confidence, as you pointed out, has been eroded to the point at which it's going to be very difficult for you to walk into a police station
and do that, isn't it? So and survivors that have come through it, of course they will be stronger people because they've been through that situation, they've come out the other end, and I'm sure Alex will you know, he will be a stronger person at the end of this, and should be proud of the fact that he's managed to leave and he can get his life back on track.
85058 is the text number. Emma has texted in to say, my dad is in an abusive marriage. I've spoken about this before on 5 Live. It was only listening back to my call on the radio that as a family we realised how shocking it all is to see our dad go through this. My dad was such a strong man, and now he is a shell of himself. He knows he needs to leave her, but he can't, and she won't let him go. It's heartbreaking. I mean, this is, I mean, Mark, what do you do in this situation? You see someone you love, as Emma is pointing out, a hollow himself, the shell of a man that he used to be. And it's heartbreaking for everybody around, but they just have this hold.
Well, I think in those situations, it's important that there are helplines out there that help family members who know somebody who's a victim. I mean, around 1 in 5 calls we get are actually from mothers and sisters and friends and family members. The key thing is, and I think Linda mentioned it about 20 minutes ago, about trying to get in contact with them, trying to actually explain to them what's happening. But I think importantly, give them the confidence that there is a way out, and actually help them with that escape route, because often men and also women won't know. It's the fear of the unknown. If they leave, what's going to happen to them? Where they're going to go? Will they lose their job? If you can provide a proper escape route for them, then that actually will help them, because you're getting rid of that fear of the unknown.
That's it. And for a lot of parents, what will happen is that they will fall out with their children, whether it's a male or female, because they see, they hear the abuse, they know it's wrong and try and help, till it sort of causes that argument, and the perpetrator is then, that's his power, that's his isolation from family and friends. So I would say to family and friends, you know, even if you're struggling with it, make sure you're always aware when that you're always going to be there when that person says, please help.
Tom in Brighton, she's a word of caution. He says, as a social worker, I've supported male victims of domestic abuse at the hands of a female partner. But we also have to be careful, because some abusive males incite female partners to physical violence as a way of control. They draw them back by saying they'll drop the charges if they do what they want. I mean, it's a very complicated situation for police to be in. Let's get a legal sense from Rachel Horman, who's our solicitor with us today, who specialises in domestic abuse and stalking. So, Rachel, just walk me through and walk our listeners through this, if you may, if you can. A man goes into a police station and says, this is happening to me.
Yeah.
What happens next?
So the police will talk through the options with the victim. The police do have a policy that they should bring charges in relation to domestic abuse where at all possible. So the victim will be encouraged to make a formal complaint about it. And that comes down to the victim really having confidence in the process, which is why it's so important that the victim understands what's going to happen and also receives emotional support from a domestic abuse organisation as well, because whilst the legal side is fairly straightforward, the tough bit is going on in the victim's head, and that's where they need the help, really. So they need to be supported throughout it. But generally,
so is that accessed immediately? Do the police say immediately, well, this is the legal side of it, but you need to have counselling and support, and this is what this is who you should contact?
Well, not all of the police will direct the victim in the correct way, unfortunately. And when you spoke right. about a postcode lottery, that does happen. And even within the same police force, it depends on who the police officer is that comes out to that incident. But I would encourage any victim to contact a helpline and speak to somebody there and to actually get some local help, perhaps face-to-face help, so that they can be supported through it and listen to the different options regarding police and or going to court in the civil court to obtain a protective order. But generally speaking, if the police do prosecute the perpetrator for coercive control or another domestic abuse type offence, that perpetrator will be subject to bail conditions, generally speaking. So they won't be allowed to contact the victim at all, because you don't need to threaten the victim to make them drop the charges. It can just be emotional abuse. That's where the stalking often starts.
But they can go back to the family home. And if there are kids involved, of course, they're going to want to put the mother with the kids, presumably. I don't know. I
mean, not necessarily.
Not
necessarily. There is no presumption of that within the family court at all.
Right.
So that isn't the case. I think, again, that is a myth that you know, people believe, but is not the case.
Right. Okay, so there could be a case, because of course the woman in question, as we've already heard, may say, well, you're not going to see your kids.
Well, the woman may be removed from the family home.
Have you seen that happen?
Yes, I've seen that happen. Yeah. And I have to say that when I have seen men go to the police, and I'd always encourage victims to do that, that generally speaking, they are believed. And I do think that, you know, men are treated very well by the criminal justice system.
And that's a very important message to get out, isn't it, Rach? Because as we're hearing, one of the problems is that men feel they won't be taken seriously by the criminal justice system.
No. And that's not my experience at all. Mm. And, you know, the media that we've had in terms of this case with a male victim, because they are far less
common. Young male victim.
Then we can see that it's something that, you know, everybody is very shocked about. So often I think they are actually treated better than a woman would be when they report it, because it is more unusual.
Okay. Domestic violence against men is an issue that we have talked about before on this programme, and in fact we did it early last year. We spoke to a gentleman called Ian. Now, he was abused by his ex-partner. She spent 3.5 years in jail after being found guilty of grievous bodily harm with intent and 4 counts of causing actual bodily harm. Again, you may find some of the content upsetting.
So just to put into context, 3 decades of lifestyle and career planning were undone in 14 months. I lost my business. I lost my home. I was registered disabled. I've got permanent scarring. The physical side was really very severe. I had cigarettes were lit and put up my nostrils. I had to extract them with a tweezer. I had a kettle of water was boiled and poured over me twice back to back. And what would ultimately send my partner to prison was branding me with a red-hot iron 3 times on my lower left forearm, my upper shoulder, and between my shoulder blades. And the psychological abuse, it was horrific. Imagine as many men listening, you look in the mirror. You don't want to look in the mirror to get a shave or brush your teeth because you've got one eye permanently closed. Your nose is fractured. Your cheekbones are swollen. You're covered in bruises. So you learn to shave and brush your teeth without seeing your own reflection because you really don't like what's coming back.
Ian, people who are abusers don't go from zero to violent overnight, do they? So what were the early signs that this woman had these traits?
In my specific case, there were no signs at all. And in fact, the first assault, I was whacked across the face with a pipe while she was hoovering and split my cheekbone. So it was really severe, and that would infer there had perhaps been previous instances, but not with me.
So as is a question often asked of women, why didn't you leave at that point?
And it's a really important question. When I look back at the first 6 months, I would say that my partner groomed me. And what I mean by that is she established trust. She then manipulated that trust and manipulated relationships with friends and family members. And at the point of knowing she had me isolated, that's when the violence started. It was a conscious strategy to isolate me and gain control.
You know what? There's so many interesting texts coming through. But before I read some of those out, let's speak to Hamish, who got in contact with us. Very good afternoon to you.
Good afternoon, Nihal. How are you?
I'm good. Thank you for joining us. Do you feel that there is a problem for men coming forward? Do you think there are barriers to stop men coming forward?
I think there are. I think there are barriers in many different kinds of crime, where particularly domestic abuse, but also sexual offences, where men would find it hard to come forward. And the police work very hard to encourage men to report those kinds of incidents, and certainly where it comes to coercive control, we don't see that many, very many at all. But I wanted to lend my voice to the voices on air to say, you know, if you are somebody who's being abused, whether it's physically or emotionally or controlled or being coerced, then please come forward, because we will believe you, we will listen to you, and we will investigate. It doesn't matter if you're male or female.
But Hamish, I should have pointed out, obviously, at the beginning that you are currently a serving police officer, Detective Sergeant. So thank you very much indeed for that. And we won't give away the force or your surname for obvious reasons. Do you feel, because I was talking about a uniform response across police forces, and you don't know every police officer in every part of the country, obviously. But can you, hand on heart, say in your own sphere that your colleagues, both male and female, would take it seriously if a man was to come in?
I can, absolutely I can. And I know that this piece of legislation, particularly the coercive control offence, has been widely welcomed by all of my colleagues. We can see that it's a very sensible piece of legislation. It's well written, and it's provable. You know, it's definitely something we can investigate and we can take to court should there be enough evidence. And finding that evidence is, you know, it could come from lots of different places. There was a case that we dealt with recently where we took evidence from friends, family, you know, devices, all of the available stuff, and it worked. And we got a charge, and this person is now waiting trial.
Two texts I want to read to you very quickly, if I may, Hamish. One says, we feel embarrassed and we know that nobody will believe us. The other text said, I would like to stay anonymous and wouldn't like to speak, but my female partner broke my arm only a few weeks ago during an epic argument. I spent a great deal of time in hospital that weekend, but the problem is that men have to accept abuse because we are seen as weak if we alert this abuse.
Well, my colleagues and I would not see anyone as weak, whether they're male or female, but particularly male. It takes a lot of courage and bravery to come forward. And we know that, particularly with female victims of domestic abuse, it takes a good number of incidents before they'll, you know, usually even consider coming forward. And what we would like to do is to reduce that number of incidents to zero. If something happens, come forward. We will listen, we will investigate, and we will do our best to get to a satisfactory solution, whether it's through calls or other means.
Well, Hamish, I can't thank you enough. I mean, as a serving police officer, I'm sure a lot of men listening will be encouraged.
Yeah, but come forward. If it's happening to you, come forward. We'll listen and we'll keep you safe.
Great. Good lad. Thank you very much, Hamish, for joining us.
Thanks for your time.
Cheers. Detective Sergeant there getting in contact with us. Tim from Maidenhead. So my own view of the topic under discussion is this: the charities, police and male sufferers of abuse from women all need to discuss how to create realistic dramas to highlight this problem, whether they be films, reality TV series or plays. Short dramas should be included in party political broadcasts. You can put a newspaper article in a bin, but you won't want to treat your TV, local cinema or theatre in the same spirit. That's Tim from Maidenhead's argument. Listen, thank you very much indeed for being our guest. Mark Brooks, Chairman of Mankind Initiative. Also to Linda Penderid, who's an advice worker with the charity Northamptonshire Domestic Abuse Services. Also Rachel Horman, who's a solicitor specialising in domestic abuse and stalking. Please come forward. That is the message that is coming through, that you will be believed. There is an action line number which I'd like to give to you again. It's free. It's 0800 888 800. And you can go to bbc.co.uk/actionline and find out specifically about domestic abuse charities, and it will guide you towards the right place. You are not alone. After two,